You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
The Supreme Court announced yesterday that it would leave in place a lower court's order saying that the travel and immigration ban from the Trump administration would need to exempt family members like grandparents from the ban. Originally, only relatives like parents, spouses, and children were allowed by the State Department. While many people are celebrating this as a victory, other people, such as refugees from war-torn areas, are still banned from entering the United States.
Shobha Siva Prasad Wadia joins us now. She's an expert on immigration law and the Samuel Weiss Faculty Scholar and Clinical Professor of Law at Penn State University. She's also the founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. Shobha, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Before we pick apart the paragraph order that came down from the Supreme Court yesterday, let's do a quick refresher. What is the travel order and what does it do?
Sure. So this all originates from remarks made by the president on the campaign trail to announce and implement a total shutdown of Muslim immigration to the United States. And sure enough, 1 week after inauguration on January 27th, the president signed his first executive order on a travel ban suspending refugee processing and the entry of all persons from seven countries with Muslim populations of more than 90%. The first executive order also indefinitely suspended Syrian refugee admissions. And there was a lot of litigation and courtroom traffic blocking the most controversial portions of this travel order. Rather than deal with that in short term, the president revised and signed a second travel ban or Muslim ban on March 6th, 2017, and maintained many of the same controversial provisions, especially as it related to the suspension of nationals from Muslim-majority countries, one exception being Iraq, and as it related to the 120-day suspension of refugee processing. And this second executive order or travel ban also went to the courts. It went to a court in Hawaii as well as to Maryland. These were the most prominent cases. They were then appealed to federal circuit courts and then went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so the Supreme Court has already made a message about this ban on June 26th and sent another message, which we can get into during the show as you like, yesterday.
And remind us again what countries are still currently under this travel and immigration ban.
Sure. So according to the ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court on June 26th, any person from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen who lacks a bona fide relationship to a person or an entity is banned from entering the United States. In addition, any refugee from any country who lacks a similar bona fide relationship is banned.
And you mentioned these specific countries are being singled out because of their Muslim population.
Well, this is one line of argument, and it's the position I hold. These are countries that have Muslim populations of more than 90%. I think if you connect that with the various statements that have been made about Muslims, both pre- and post-inauguration day, and you couple that with the many successful arguments about how this order violates the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, you clearly do see a religious animus, in my view.
The word bona fide has come up again and again in terms of what family members can be allowed into the country. What are some of the issues that we get when we look at relatives here?
The first the first moment I read the per curiam ruling from the Supreme Court on June 26th and saw that they had created this bona fide relationship test, I knew that what was going to come next was this unleashing of uncertainty and murkiness around what constitutes a bona fide relationship. The Supreme Court used a few examples. For example, it said that a close family relationship like a spouse or a mother-in-law or a relationship to an entity like a student's relationship to a university could qualify as a bona fide relationship. But we really didn't have a lot of information or detail hours before this partial ban was to be reinstated on June 29th. The administration, through the Departments of Homeland Security and State, issued guidance on what they believe is bona fide. And this led to a lot of controversy, as you alluded to. The first iteration by the agency excluded fiancés, grandmas, grandpas, aunts, uncles, nieces from the bona fide relationship label, and also called into question refugees who have a formal assurance from a refugee resettlement agency. This made the plaintiffs in Hawaii and other members of the public unhappy and puzzled about the gap between the Supreme Court's ruling and the agency's interpretation. And so we saw another round of litigation leading to yesterday's short paragraph order by the U.S. Supreme Court adopting a broader understanding for what constitutes family and a bona fide relationship to a person, but at the same time conceding or putting the ball, if you will, in the Ninth Circuit's court to decide whether or not a assurance from a refugee resettlement agency constitutes a bona fide relationship with respect to refugees.
We're talking right now with Shobha Siva Prasad Wadia. She is an expert on immigration law and the Samuel Weiss Faculty Scholar and Clinical Professor of Law at Penn State University. She's also the founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. We are looking at the travel and immigration ban, the twists and the turns of it, and what came down as late as yesterday from the Supreme Court in a one-paragraph order. There were two parts of this paragraph that some saw was a partial win, Shobha, for the Trump administration. The other part on refugees, not so much. Break down this order for us.
Sure. A good question. And I think that you framed it as I would, that the win, if you will, was for families and for agreeing and recognize that grandparents are the epitome of a close family relationship or the term bona fide. And so the court adopted a broader understanding for family. And so now someone who is from one of these six countries, for example, who is seeking entry and has a connection to a grandma, grandpa, aunt, or uncle would be exempt from the travel ban. But the loss, really, and the disappointment is with regard to refugees. You know, those who are refugees are fleeing severe harm, which we call in U.S. law persecution, at the hands of the government for a specific reason, and they're fleeing for their lives. And we have a system where refugees who are outside the United States may have a contact or a relationship with a refugee resettlement agency here. And to ignore that relationship or to ban these refugees, even if they have this assurance from a refugee resettlement agency, is certainly concerning and troubling. I expect that the plaintiffs in Hawaii will be explaining to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals about how that should be read and also support a Hawaii court ruling that recognized this relationship.
And at the end of that paragraph, several justices thought the ban should be brought back without changes. What can we read into that? Are we seeing a pretty clear divide happening here on the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I think we're seeing both a lot of ping pong, right, from court to court, as well as great divide. I mean, you might even call the June 26th ruling, the partial stay, also a bit of a split ruling by creating this bona fide test. I think the fact that Justices Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch yesterday would have stayed the entire Hawaii District Court order does raise meaningful questions of what the court will do in October, because separate from all of this is a decision that the Supreme Court made to hear the case and the legality of this ban during the fall October term. And it did so by granting certiorari, which is a second decision it made on June 26th. I wish I had multiple crystal balls. I think we are in for the possibility of split decisions and a lot of hypothesis on what the outcome might be.
It's been interesting as a bystander watching lower courts stand up, take the lead on fighting this, specifically Hawaii, U.S. District Judge Derek Watson and his ruling, and really taking this to task, so to speak, in non-legalese there. What can we make of how states are fighting this?
I think there have been some fairly poetic and strong narratives by both the district courts and the appellate courts around this litigation, by Judge Watson and also by the appellate courts. I think at one point Jonathan Swift was quoted in one of these rulings, and I think that this teaches us that this is a debate that is not just about the law, but also about people. And, you know, when I think about the first cable by the Department of State excluding all of the extended family members that I personally was in contact with and celebrating in the last 8 weeks, that really raises fundamental questions not only about the law and jurisprudence that recognizes family in a much broader way, but also culture and identity. So I think on a lot of different lanes and threads, the agency got it wrong the first time in how it judged bona fide relationship.
We're talking to Shobha Sivaprasad Wadia. She's an expert on immigration law and the Samuel Weiss Faculty Scholar and Clinical Professor of Law at Penn State University.
You can join us by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of the Supreme Court's order to let the travel ban stay in place for now as it is? Do you support the travel ban? Is your family impacted? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment over on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. We're continuing our conversation about the Supreme Court's order yesterday to let President Trump's travel ban remain in place for now with some restrictions. And we're speaking with Shobha Sivaprasad Wadia. She's an expert on immigration law and the Samuel Weiss Faculty Scholar and Clinical Professor of Law at Penn State University.
And you can join the conversation by calling in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the travel ban? What message do you think it sends to the rest of the world? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Shobha, you're the director of an immigrant rights clinic. On the ground, what are you hearing and experiencing from people whose lives are at stake from this travel ban?
Well, I am situated at Big Ten University. It is the fourth most affected university by the first version of the travel ban. I think that the immigration agenda by the current president, travel ban and beyond, has had a significant impact on the communities we serve. We have engaged in a number of information sessions and screenings of individuals who are potentially impacted and answered scores of questions about what the ban and other executive orders that have been signed by the president mean for the fate of individuals and families. It's a very uncertain time for students, scholars, dreamers, individuals who are undocumented, individuals who look like they're undocumented, and so on.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to John in Janesville. Hi, John.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm for the ban, and I just feel that it should be stronger than what it is. We have to protect our borders from undesirables. But more importantly, there's a border system. Otherwise, why don't we take the whole world then and see what would be left of this country? I'm really for the ban, and I hope that the Supreme Court holds it up. The American people voted Trump in. The American people have spoken. There's some people who just don't want to realize that the American people are for Trump and for his ban.
Shoba, what do you make of what John is saying, that this doesn't go far enough and shore up the borders?
Yeah, so I really appreciate the point. As a immigration attorney and law professor, I believe in the rule of law. We need to have an immigration system that works, and we have the right as a nation to know who is coming into the United States and who is exiting. I think, in my view, the fatal flaw with this travel ban is that we have not seen any relationship between national security and the thrust and content of the travel ban. In fact, several former national security experts filed an amicus brief in the course of this litigation saying just that. We also received, during the course of the litigation around both travel bans, an intelligence report suggesting that citizenship is not a likely indicator for who our next terrorist or national security threat might be. Secondly, I would say that we have a legal question that needs to be answered. We have a constitution, and no president can be above the constitution. The Establishment Clause of the First Amendment teaches us that the government cannot favor one religion over another. And in courtroom after courtroom, you know, judges have really seen a string of events and applied longstanding tests on whether or not this clause is being violated to suggest that it may, in fact, be in violation. There's also been an interesting statutory argument challenging the travel ban originating from a section of the Immigration and Nationality Act. It might be too gritty for this call, but beyond the important policy questions, I think we have these national security and legal ones that are unanswered, and that leaves us with the question of, you know, what are the goals, and are we meeting them through this ban?
Well, John, thanks so much for calling in. Let's now go to Peter in Stevens Point. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay, just a couple quick things. Number one, my great-grandparents came over here from Norway and came to Ellis Island. And I'm tearing up a little bit because it's emotional. They remember the words on the Statue of Liberty: bring me your poor, your downtrodden. And in my family, and I know in many families today, especially ones maybe from immigrant countries, grandparents are an extremely important part of the family situation. You know, every major holiday we spent with grandparents.
And so how, Peter, do those abiding words on the Statue of Liberty speak to you today? Do you feel like we're following them as a country?
No way, I'm sorry. It scares me. It literally scares me. I used to live on Staten Island, and I could see the Statue of Liberty from my apartment.
Well, and I'm going to jump in here because we're short on time. Shoba, the travel order is supposed to be temporary. Do we see an end to this at any point?
I don't see a real end as it relates to the administration's assault on immigrant communities and, in particular, Muslims and refugees and other vulnerable populations. Even after a decision is made around this ban, we could see a more permanent order in place. God forbid, if there is an incident on U.S. soil, we could also see a version of this ban on the interior. And I'll also point out that there are still several tools and powers that the Department of State has to implement a so-called backdoor ban through delayed processing, extreme vetting procedures, and so on. So I don't see these issues and the individuals and communities they impact going away anytime soon.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for calling in. And Shoba, thank you so much for taking the time today and breaking this down for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Shoba Siva Prasad Wadia is an expert on immigration law and the Samuel Weiss Faculty Scholar and Clinical Professor of Law at Penn State University. She's also the founder and director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. She joined us to talk about the Supreme Court's order not to allow President Trump's travel ban and immigration ban to be implemented for now.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it's Food Friday. We'll talk about grilling meat.
That's coming up tomorrow on Central Time.